The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 993. It's the 13th of February 2018. On the podcast today, I have Colm Clunan, Finance Director of Tlou Energy, TLOU. And Colm discusses the Botswana government's decision to ask them to resubmit their request for proposal for the development of up to 100 megawatts of CBM-fueled power plant. Also on the podcast, Paul Angelatos, General Manager and Senior Vice President of Seeing Machines Fleet. And Seeing Machines ticker, by the way, is C-S-E-E. And Paul provides an update on recent news. Plus, Mark Child, Chairman and CEO of Condor Gold, CNR, discusses their resource and the strategy going forward. Plus, I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And by the way, we've now created a new page on Vox at the blog there. So go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, where you can see the top five most followed companies over the last 7 days, the last 30 days, and of course the last 24 hours. But I'll cover the last 24 hours in the podcast today. I'm also doing the top five most liked RSS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colm Clunan, Finance Director of Tlou Energy. It's TLOU ticker. Colm, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, we had a bombshell drop. The share price had bombshell. It's bounced back today. But it was almost an RNS drop, a bit of news drop that people weren't expecting. We'll get to that in a bit. Before we get into that, Colm, I think a lot of people may have, are sort of picking up on the story now and may have taken advantage of the dip in share price. And even if they don't know anything about the company, but you know, if someone's new and listening to this right now and they could take advantage of this dip, give them a brief summary of what Tlou is all about, please, Colm.
Well, Tlou, we're a coal bed methane company with operations based in Botswana. We're listed on the Botswana Exchange. We're listed in Australia, and we're listed on AIM. Now, we develop coal bed methane, which is the extraction of gas from underground coal. We use that gas to generate power, and we plan to sell that power into the regional market in southern Africa, not just Botswana, but other members of the Southern African power pool, other countries down there. So yeah, we've been working in the area for about 8 years now. We have a mining license in place, which means we have the permissions to develop our field. We have an environmental impact assessment in place. We have gas reserves in place, and we are far and away the leading company from a CBM perspective in the region.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's a very compelling story because you've got Botswana, very stable sort of democratic government there, and you've got Southern African area, which has a supply energy deficit, and most of the time they're relying on diesel-based sort of expensive and dirty fuels sources. So you come along with coal bed methane as a part solution to this, so it's very compelling. And it seems like the government has been very helpful. And so you've had this request for proposal for 100 megawatt power station, and then it was all going well, and then yesterday we got this RNS come out, and I read the RNS about 6-7 times, I must have, looking for hints or subtleties in it that would push it. But so explain what the RNS is all about, please, Colm.
Yeah, so just to go back on the RFP, is around this time last year the Botswana government came out with this request for proposal, which is the RFP, for companies to tender to build a gas-to-power solution for up to 100 megawatts worth of power in Botswana. Now, the tender was only offered to two groups, and one of them being Tlou ourselves. So we responded to that, and we were expecting a reply from the government this quarter, which we got yesterday. Now, we were expecting a simple sort of yes, you've succeeded with your bid, or no, you haven't, and effectively that being the end of that. But it was a rather unusual response from the ministry yesterday. We had expected a simple yes or no, and we seem to have got something in between. So We will get more insight into the reasons for this on Wednesday this week, when there will be a debriefing session by the ministry for both of the bidders that were involved. But in effect, other than timing, which was an unknown anyway, nothing has really changed and we're still waiting for the RFP. So I suppose you could say the goalposts have moved a little bit, but we'll get further details on Wednesday. The fact that there is a re-tender does suggest, as we've always known, that the CBA ministry is vitally important to the government in Botswana. Otherwise, why would they request the re-tender? Now, one of our local Botswana directors, Habake, he's obviously been in consultation with various people over the last number of days, and he has reiterated that fact this morning that the re-tender or the CBM tender is still vitally important to or within government, so hence the reason for that re-tender. So before we go back and apply for that or re-tender again, before we commit to it, look, we want to be fully aware of what's involved, what it entails. We'll seek clarification on why the original tender was cancelled. We don't want to commit to responding to the new tender until full details of how it'll work, including definitive timelines. Like the previous tender sort of was a little bit vague on when we would get a response and discussions that we could have with various parties as the RFP or as the tender process proceeded. And in any case, we've always planned to go into the grid regardless of the RSP, and we'll continue to pursue external off-takers in the region, of which there are many. So the RFP, successful or otherwise, is still only one of many options that we have to sell our gas or our power regionally.
Explain that, Colin. So if you don't go the government route here, how do you sell your gas to the grid? How does that work? What do you do? So obviously still build a power station or what? What happens?
We could go it alone and decide, we're going to start drilling our field. We will put in transmission lines, we'll put in a power station and connect to the Botswana grid. Now, the only requirement for us to be able to connect to the Botswana grid is that the assets that we would build would be of sufficient standard to meet Botswana Power Corp's requirements. And then once we're connected to the grid, in Botswana is part of the Southern African Power Pool. So let's say we make an agreement with a power generation utility outside of Botswana, let's say Zimbabwe, for instance, and we decide with the Zimbabwe power utility, who are in chronic need of power themselves, and they agree to buy, we'll say, 10 megawatts worth of power from us, then we can wheel our power. We generate the power in Botswana, we wheel it through the Botswana grid and sell it into the Zimbabwe grid. And the only additional cost to the Zimbabwe purchaser is that they will have to pay a wheeling tariff for us to wheel the power through the Botswana grid. So let's say we were selling our power and it was costing 10 cents a kilowatt hour, and Botswana Power Corp may put I'm just making this figure up off the top of my head, but let's say they put a 1 cent wheeling tariff on it, then at the other, the off-taker is essentially paying 11 cents a kilowatt hour.
All right. So there wouldn't be any problem doing that, would there, as far as the Botswana government is concerned?
No, there is no restriction on doing it. Botswana is part of the SAPP, Southern African Power Pool, and as members of that power pool, that facility is in place and can't be restricted. So there's no concern with us selling to other members of the SAPP, despite the fact that we're generating power within Botswana. Now, I think it would probably end up being a little bit unusual if we're generating power in Botswana, selling it externally when they need it in country themselves. But
going back to this, rebuttal delay, and it is a delay, and the share price dropped because I think initially people expected that to be the sort of confirmation you'd got that, and then all of a sudden they read it and said, "Well, that wasn't expected." Like you said, we were expecting a yes or no. We weren't expecting this delay, and so they say there that the Ministry of Mineral Resources, Green Technology, and Energy Security request for cancellation for the tender for development of maximum 100 megawatts coal bed methane filled power plants and a retender by shortlisting the same two bidders who bid for the tender being Talao Energy and Sakanami, or the, I can't pronounce that name, but yeah. So essentially, yeah, it must be. I was trying to work out what the issue is here, and it must be a change in obviously their requirements in some way, or it's become so detailed in some way that they have to change it so it's material enough for you to have to resubmit, because rather than change bits of it. Is there any idea or any have you got any inkling as to why they've done this or not?
Yeah, well, not particularly. I'd just be speculating, but with the retender coming up, what we would like to see is, rather than going through a long, drawn-out process again, and like the previous RFP process, there's a 5-megawatt solar power project near a place called Shoshong in Botswana. Mm-hmm. Now, in that process, that's a 5-megawatt pilot project, so it's a small pilot again, and now Botswana Power Corp are the off-takers for that pilot project, and there wasn't a full RFP proposal or tender proposal done in that case. Ideally, we'd have a similar situation for the retender, whereby there wouldn't be the long RFP process, because that's no advantage to us, to the government, or to the other bidders, or to anyone that really wants to start this new industry in country. Look, so potentially that may happen. I'm just speculating, but it would be an ideal scenario if it's a much quicker and smoother process. And possibly they'll come out and say, look, we don't initially want 100 megawatts. We'll go with 10, which would suit us perfectly. Mm-hmm. Go with the 10 megawatts, and once that's in place, we'll continue to build out the field, and we can go from there. And just to touch on a separate issue, I just mentioned that 5-megawatt solar project. We're actually looking at incorporating solar generation in our field as well. It's early stages, but once we have our transmission lines in place in the field, and our initial plan is to put in 66 kVs, KV lines, which would be capable of taking between 20 and 25 megawatts worth of power. And let's say we initially do a CBM project that transmits 10 megawatts. Well, effectively, we have between 10 and 15 megawatts of spare capacity in our lines. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the possibility for the simple installation of some solar panels. We could use that spare capacity and transmit some solar generation through those same power lines. So you'd have further revenue, with the main capex cost just being solar panels.
Yeah. So yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's plenty of opportunities. But the interesting thing is because this was unexpected, and people don't like unexpected, especially investors, it created uncertainty and the share price dropped. But like you say, this meeting tomorrow that you're having could be a positive thing, couldn't it? It could be like they make it simplify the process because they realise it's become a bit too complicated. And someone even said they may even up the 100 megawatts or whatever. They may make it a simpler process or a more positive process for you, and not a negative one. So everyone just assumes it's a bad thing when it could be a good thing, couldn't it?
You know? Yeah, it could definitely. And look, we're still in our... In our planning, our key item is to get connected to the grid. You know, whether it be a 100 megawatt project, a 10 megawatt project, a 2 megawatt project, a 200 megawatt project, we just want to get connected to the grid, because that effectively opens up all doors. So while we're working on getting an offtake agreement, we are building our reserves. That's a real key issue and a major driver of company valuation. Mm-hmm. So people are aware that recently we did our seismic survey, and we did additional core holes in the field. Now, the real goal behind them was to give us more geological data in the region for where we will commence our field development. But also, the real key part of that is driving these additional reserves, because that does vitally underpin a company's valuation. Tony Gilby, our MD, his former company, Sunshine Gas, is an excellent example of that, where they just built reserves and ended up selling the company at a significant price a number of years ago. So in relation to those reserves, we are expecting results from SRK in the near term. And I would see a positive result from that process as a much more significant statement than even if we had received the RFP yesterday.
Yeah.
So, there's lots of potential off-takers in the region, but we'll end up getting one and probably more of them. But what there isn't is the only gas that's in the ground. We can't change that. So, getting the reserve results saying you have this amount of gas in the ground and that you can get it out. That independent confirmation of gas in place is a major statement. So, look, yeah, that's a major news item to come. And from my point of view, if the results are positive from that, I would see that as a huge statement from the company. So going forward, we'll be looking at continuously building on that reserve statement, with work on the ground, and at the same time we'll progress with the RFP, subject to what it entails. Following the meeting tomorrow, we'll continue with that RFP, and of course we will continue with our negotiations on getting external off-takers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, the gas is the value here, because without the gas, without the methane, there's no power, is there? You know, so yeah. Well, that's the important bit. You can't build a power station unless you have got the reserves.
Exactly.
But if you have the reserves, you can always do that. And so that's the base case for the valuation there. Okay, Colin, you know the score here. I'm going to ask you for three reasons. So if someone's listening to this, I like the sound of what you're doing, and they're not yet following the story, but want to add you to the watch list. Give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so look, despite the yesterday's news, the RFP is still an available path to us to market if we want to go that route, but it's just one of many. The company fundamentals are still the same. We have money in the bank. We have a huge gas asset. The market is enormous. We've got environmental approval in place. We have a mining license in place. We have gas reserves. We're the only ones with those in country. We have results imminent from our recent seismic and core hole survey, which can potentially give us an increase in gas reserves. That news is due in the near term. Our half-year report is planned to be released next week, and this will outline our planned activities for the coming year. And of course, we will keep shareholders informed on developments with the re-tender as it progresses.
Marvellous stuff. And like I said, well, yeah, that meeting's tomorrow. It's on Valentine's Day. So nice relationship going on there. So when do you expect to release the news? You know, will it be immediately or obviously you have to write up the RNS properly, but when do you expect that to come out?
Yeah, once we get the details from Botswana tomorrow. Now, I'm not aware of the exact time of the meeting. I've just been told it was tomorrow. So, look, ideally we would get it out tomorrow afternoon, UK time, as in Wednesday afternoon, UK time. If not, it'll be first thing on Thursday morning.
Excellent stuff. Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. And I mean that very not-too-distant. Very close. Cheers.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Angelatos, General Manager and Senior Vice President of Seeing Machines Fleet. And the ticker for Seeing Machines, it's SEE or C. Paul, thanks for joining me again.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
Now, before we go any further and go into some specific questions about what you're doing and the fleet side of things, for people listening who are not aware of Seeing Machines, can you explain what it is, you know, they do or you do, and just give us a basic summary, please, Paul?
Yeah, sure. So for your listeners who may not have heard us on this program previously, we're a technology company focused on driver and operator safety. Our technology platform is at the core of driver monitoring. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at faces and eyes and determining the state of a driver or an operator and alerting them to when they become fatigued or distracted. Now, we provide this capability to a number of markets. So the part of the business I'm responsible for is really about aftermarket products, and we provide them to our mining industry. Our major partner there is Caterpillar. We're providing product now to our rail partner, Progress Rail, and of course, through a myriad of fleet customers around the world. The other part of our business is our automotive business, and that's really focused on an integrated product that's working with OEMs and is installed in a passenger vehicle.
Marvellous stuff. Now, last week you released a fleet update. This covered some significant news, and the first bit I'd like to touch on is the work you're doing with Mix Telematics. And I see you and Mix have a new customer, a Chevron company based in Kazakhstan. So tell me more about the solution you've sold and what that means for the business, please, Paul.
Yeah, sure. So, look, firstly, it was a really important decision for us to partner with Mix Telematics. And we did this for a number of reasons. Mix are a really well-established telematics company. And again, for the listeners who are not sure what I'm talking about with telematics, telematics is just almost commonplace now for a fleet. for a commercial fleet or a commercial vehicle. It's simply a device that allows information about the vehicle to be communicated back to the owner, and it might be things like the location of the vehicle, speed of the vehicle, fuel consumption, a whole range of operating data around the vehicle. And what we found with the sale of our product is that, you know, nearly all our customers and prospective customers have some form of telematics, so it was important for us to be able to integrate with them. So MiX being a major player, they've got over 500,000 connections around the world. So working with them was a no-brainer. We're able to integrate our product safely at a good commercial arrangement, which makes it simpler for our customer. It means that we end up with one user interface. So for them to gather their data and look at their reports, it's much simpler. But also opened up a really significant piece of the market to us. The deal with Chevron or TCO is really important. It's the first really major deal that we've worked on together. And working with a company like TCO, which is a Chevron company, again, really important. And when you're working with companies like that that have a really keen safety culture, it makes the selling very, very easy. They get it from day one about what you're trying to do and what the value the product brings. So, you know, the sale process becomes very simple. And then when you can actually integrate with a major player like MiX Telematics, it makes the solution even simpler.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that MiX has a massive sort of contact network. And so do you think you'll start to see more sort of joint opportunities through that relationship with MiX and their massive sort of network there?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's the relationship and getting to this deal with TCO in Kazakhstan, you know, I must admit, took a little bit longer than we would have initially liked. But it wasn't so much convincing TCO. It was about us working together with MiX and getting our solution right. We've done that now. So now that we've got TCO under our belt, we've proven it. We've proven that the value that customers can benefit from. And we suspect now that there'll be many other TCO-like opportunities for both Seeing Machines and MiX.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about Coach USA. It's, you know, it's a big name. And is this the first time you've been involved with buses specifically? And, you know, tell us more about that relationship, if you could, Paul.
Yeah, so Coach USA are part of a very big conglomerate. And again, they're a company that has a very robust safety policy. You know, coaches, as you can appreciate, are carrying, you know, the most important cargo, they're carrying people. So again, they really see the value of a system that makes sure their drivers are kept safe, and then therefore the passengers kept safe. Look, this deployment started with 240 systems, which is only a small piece of their overall fleet. But we're now in discussions with them about a wider deployment. Coach USA have recently approached us, and together we've jointly produced a video which Coach are now using for the internal change management within their organisation, but also to use with their customers who engage Coach. And for them, it really increases the value proposition of why their customers want to use Coach USA and the fact that they take safety really seriously. So it's we're really happy to be part of that video and assist them with that process.
Yeah, yeah. And still on the sort of buses and coach theme, you also mentioned a research project with RATP here in London, or RAPT, as I say. Can you give us a bit more update on that? And when you say research, what do you mean by that? What did you do with the results from that?
Yeah, so Transport for London basically had a fund available mm-hmm. to organisations to bid on to, you know, with the ultimate goal to improving safety around public transport. So together with our RATP, we put in submission and were awarded a significant grant to do this research. So the way we're going to conduct that is that there'll be some particular routes in London that are deemed to be high use and potentially high risk. And we'll put our system in there and we'll gather data around the impacts of fatigue and distraction on drivers. So at the core of what we do with Seeing Machines is what we call human factors research. So that's really about understanding how humans interact with machines. We have really fortunate to have one of the world leaders in human factors research as part of our company, Professor Mike Linnae. And Mike's been working with institutions all around the world and large companies for many years now, assisting them with improving their safety. But it's all done on the basis of solid data. So we use that data then to understand more about how the driver interacts with the vehicle, what impact external factors have on the driver. And we use that then to better improve the algorithms. The golden nugget for us is to move away from just being able to detect fatigue and distraction to ultimately being able to be more predictive, so we can look at a driver and know in advance what are the signs that are leading up to a driver becoming fatigued or distracted. So that's the importance of the human factors research.
Yeah, that's very interesting, the interaction, the relationship between sort of man and machine, isn't it? Very interesting.
Absolutely.
I like looking at that kind of thing. Okay, well, Paul, if someone's listening right now and they like the sound of what you're doing, but they're not following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should add you to their watch list by hitting that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Sure. So if you're new to the company or interested, firstly, we're a world leader in our field. We used to be able to say that we were the first, and we were, but now actually a world leader. We're working with some of the biggest brands that deliver innovative safety solutions across multiple transport sectors. So, you know, household names like Caterpillar, Emirates, and General Motors, just to name a few. Seeing Machines has just completed a very successful capital raise on the AIM, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware of. So that means we're really well positioned to leverage in our key markets. We have the capital now to continue our really sophisticated R&D and to scale our business. And I guess ultimately, Seeing Machines technology is, you know, highly topical, because we're actually working in a space that's enabling autonomous vehicle production and the safe use of autonomous vehicles. So, you know, people often think that our technology is going to be superseded by autonomous vehicles, but it's quite the opposite. You know, legislators want to know that there is a safe mechanism to be able to still understand what a driver's doing and enable the safe use of an autonomous vehicle. So we're very much key to that space.
Yeah, so it's more sort of complementary rather than, you know, it's replacing it, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent stuff. Paul, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mark Child, Chairman and CEO of Condor Gold. That's CNR ticker. Mark, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
It's always nice to have a new company on. We've not talked before, and so I know sort of shareholders will welcome you coming on and chatting. But for non-shareholders, Mark, for people who've not heard of Condor Gold or may have heard of you but not quite sure as to what you do, can you give us a brief summary explaining what the business is all about, please?
Yes, certainly. Condor's been listed on AIM for about 11 years. We have a sold asset in Nicaragua. We spent about $45 million and put in 70,000 meters of drilling. So we're a gold exploration company, very advanced stage. We've got 2.3 million ounces of gold resource. We've got a reserve within that of just under 700,000 ounces, so an economic reserve. And we're in the final stages of permitting a base case, a pilot plant, which will produce about 100,000 ounces of gold a year.
Right, so you're going from exploration to production. And when do you expect this, on a timeline-wise, when is that supposed to happen, Mark?
We're waiting on permits at the moment. We have been for about 18 months. So once we actually get the permits, we will then got to produce a bankable feasibility study and then go through the construction phase.
Excellent stuff. And as yet, I mean, Nicaragua as a place to work, what's it like there, jurisdiction-wise?
It's the poorest country in South America, mm-hmm. But gold is the third biggest export. So importantly, they realise that gold is a way of alleviating poverty and revenues, creating jobs, revenues coming to the government. And I've just heard this morning that the Minister of the Inward Investment Ministry is actually going to PDAC, the biggest mining conference in Toronto, in 2 weeks' time, where I'll be meeting him. So they're pro-mining, which is the good news.
Absolutely. And as far as, you know, you said that your bankable feasibility study will hopefully be coming out, but what do you know about the cost? I mean, have you got any sort of rough guesses, ideas, the cost of all in producing here?
Yes, certainly. The The grade of our 2.3 million ounces is 4.5 grams, so that's really high grade. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, the all-in sustaining cash costs are $700 an ounce, lower quartile. And the upfront capital cost for the project will be about $110 million.
And are you having discussions on that, the funding?
No, we're waiting on permits. So once we get the permits, there's a 12 months of additional studies to be done to go to bankable feasibility study, and then there's an 18 month construction period. But in tandem with that, we had two other parts of the strategy. I mentioned a pilot plant or base case, mm-hmm. but we're only permitting about 35% of our existing resource. So and we think that existing resource very easily, we can add another million ounces to it by taking the existing core area of 2.1 million and drilling along strike and down depth. And that can become 3 million. So we're paving the way for this to be 3 million ounces out of a core area. Mm-hmm. That should be 2 million ounces of recovered gold. So our idea is to get a base case plant up for 100,000 and in due course show that that can be almost double to 200,000 ounces of production. And that's part of the strategy. And the third part is outside of that core area. There's a what if this is a much bigger district. So we spent a lot of the last 2 years using different techniques to prove that we've got a 5 million ounce district, and that's flying it with helicopter-borne geophysics, trenching it, geological mapping, structural geological models, geochemistry as well, soil sampling over the whole district. It's a multi-disciplined approach using sort of five or six things to prove that this could be a big elephant or 5 million ounces plus of gold.
Yeah.
So we've got three parts to the strategy, really.
Yeah. And, you mentioned the permitting there. How is that process going?
It's been a bit challenging. The shareholders and people who follow the company will realize that we've had a 18-month delay on permits. And that delay has been caused because we have 1,000 people to resettle all 330 rooms we put within our studies and submission to the government. That, as a function of that, the politicians have, although they want the mine, there's been cautiousness on the part of the government in the run-up to elections. So I've actually just come back from Nicaragua, and I can say 10 days ago, I had about 8 different meetings with ministers, son of the president, local governor, local mayor, local priest, local bishop, inward investment directors. So we've made a bit of a breakthrough, and we're discussing with the government how to progress the project without resettlement. And that's really gone down really well with the government. And I think that's unlocking the permitting impasse that we had. So I'm mm-hmm. now more optimistic today than at any stage that we're going to get those permits.
Excellent. Okay. And just looking through your news timeline there, I see you recently listed on the TSX. And so why did you make that decision then, Mark?
Well, there are 5 companies listed on the TSX that are operating in Nicaragua, mm-hmm. The biggest being B2 Gold, which produces 200,000 ounces of gold. So Nicaragua and Mexico, Central South America is very much better understood in Canada. And 70% of the companies listed on the TSX are oil and gas and mining and gold production companies. So we think it's a sort of natural better home. So it raises, as we go into production, it raises our financing options, and we think we'll get a re-rating. The companies on Canada are valued at roughly $70 an ounce in the ground, or a price-to-book ratio of 0.7. We're valued at about a quarter of that. We're about $18 an ounce in the ground. So if you take the market cap and divide it by the ounces, we're about a quarter of the Canadian valuation.
Yeah.
It'll take time to get a re-rating. We've got to do marketing. I've got a new Canadian-based director who joined a few weeks ago. That raises the profile. We're going out to Canada in another couple of weeks' time, as I mentioned. It'll take time to get the story out, because we're the new kid on the block there, if you like.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure you'll get that story out there. Mark, if someone's listening to this and they like the sound of what you're doing and where you are in the gold sort of sector, I know everyone says you should always have a bit of gold in your portfolio. So if someone's listening to this and they like the story but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them 3 reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please, by hitting that follow button.
Well, I think you're right about the gold sector. We just had Goldman Sachs come out with $1,500 an ounce for gold, mm-hmm. and people are unallocated in their portfolios generally and have been for about 7 years. So we're going to see an asset allocation into gold producers and explorers. And I think a re-rating. In our case, we've got everything in the sense that we've got a base case. We're very advanced. We've got a base case through to production of 100,000 ounces. We got the ability to, we think, double that over the course of another 3 years as we drill out and increase the deposit. And that's very visible to us. And we have the drill plans good to go to expand the resource. And thirdly, this we believe, is a substantially bigger gold district of 5 billion plus ounces.
Excellent stuff, Mark. It's good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
A pleasure. Good to talk.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are: at five, Tellu Energy, TLOU. At four, United Oil and Gas, UOG. At three, Thor Mining, THR. At two, EVR Holdings, or EVRH. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is I3E Energy. So it's I3E, is ticker I3E Energy. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Fast Forward Innovations, transaction in own shares. At four, Kodal Minerals, that's KOD. Drilling results confirm Segola Boale extension. Essentially, good lithium, good grades. And I did write a blog on Kodal, or Kodal Minerals, KOD. Worth reading, I think. You know, it's lithium. But you could say it, I think it's undervalued where they are at the moment. That's my personal opinion. I'm a holder, so I may be biased. Nothing on this podcast is regarded as investment advice. Please do your own research. It never pays off just to blindly invest on someone else's information. Do some research yourself. At three, Audioboom, proposed acquisition and suspension of trading. That's Boom ticker, by the way. That's a big takeover there. 155 million they're looking to raise, and they're a 33 million market cap company. At was a reverse takeover of Triton. At two, SDX Energy, operations update. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Mayen Energy Limited, initiation of production at two US onshore wells. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.